Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
In the late 1950s, a group of American researchers wanted to test the adaptability of different animals. They began to hypothesize an extreme question. Is it possible for a dog to become completely civilized? They wanted to know if it would be possible to have a man walk side by side with a dog as near equals. The experiment would be this. A high-class family of a mother, a father, and a teenage son would live in a house with a dog. They would live their lives as normal, but would rarely leave the house except for short breaks of fresh air. Their goal was to make the dog adjust to modern human society. From birth, the dog would be separated from its mother and not have interaction with any other dogs throughout its lifetime. The researchers felt that if it encountered even one other dog at all during its lifetime, all their effort and research would be immediately undone, and it would be reverted back to its natural instinctive lifestyle. As a result, the house would be built in complete seclusion inside a building. Immediately after being born, the dog would be dressed in specifically made clothes so it could get used to wearing them faster. They chose a Doberman Pinscher, as they had garnered the reputation of being fast learners and picking up new concepts and orders quicker than most other breeds. They had also been used in earlier world wars, so it was thought that it would be easier for them to become closer to man. Each member of the family would have the very strict responsibility of treating the dog like a person. They must always refer to it by its proper first name, never talk down to it like an inferior species, always show and remind it of proper social etiquette if it forgets. Speak to it as if it understands everything they are saying. If it doesn't at first, use smaller words that are easier to understand. Never speak slowly or talk to it like it is a small child. Assist to it every day when it needs to get dressed or change clothes. Never say good boy, bad dog, or any other phrases that are commonly used with dogs. Urge it to adapt quicker if it is not adapting fast enough. Treat it like another family member, and make sure it always thinks that it is a human. The researchers began diligently working with their scheduled laboratory. They took the healthiest adult female Doberman Pinscher from the city pet shop and brought her to the lab. They slowly and meticulously genetically modified her so she would give birth to only one healthy male Doberman puppy, with a natural lifespan much longer than normal. They didn't want the mother to give birth to more than one, because if it was in the womb with even one other dog, it would still feel a sense of wanting to belong with his fellow siblings throughout its life. They also made it so the dog would be born one certain size and would grow at a certain rate all its life. They wanted to make sure that it would fit into all the clothes they made. The final size and height of the dog would be larger than normal, so it could appear more human. While waiting for the dog to be born, they built a full-sized house within the lab and prepared it for a family of three to live comfortably inside. The house had no windows because that would only encourage the dog to leave. It was decided that the dog would stay in the house at all times. If the family needed to leave, they would walk out the secret hidden front door and go into the resting area of the lab. When the house was finished, it had a downstairs living room with a small television, a kitchen, a dining room, 3 bedrooms, one for the husband and wife, one for the son, and one for the dog, 3 walk-in closets, 2 in the parents' room and 1 in the son's room, and 2 bathrooms, 1 upstairs and 1 downstairs. There were no mirrors anywhere in the house. The researchers did their best to make a TV that didn't show much of a reflection. The television was connected to a signal at the laboratory that allowed the researchers to play anything they wanted at any time they wanted. Cameras were placed in every room except the 2 bathrooms and the 2 walk-in closets for privacy reasons. Each family member had a place to change and do their business, but that's pretty much the only privacy they had. Possible candidates for each of the family members were heavily questioned and interviewed. The researchers needed to make the absolute correct decision when picking the family. If this failed, the entire experiment could be ruined. Three more than capable people, who all were chosen to portray the fictional family, and they spent over 6 months preparing for the experiment. The father was James, the mother was Susan, and the son was Harry. They were given a large supply of nice clothes for the dog and for themselves. The kitchen was filled with necessary food to last for several weeks. If they needed, they could let the researchers know they needed food, and more would secretly be delivered to them. No one in the house needed to go to work, as they were all getting paid a very substantial amount per day to do the experiment. Most importantly, each of the three family members had a small earpiece that allowed the researchers to talk to them at any point if they wanted the family to do something. The family believed they were ready for anything. They were not. Day 1. On the day the dog was born, the researchers gave him the name David. Immediately after birth, David's mother was sent back to the pet store. With his eyes still closed, David was brought into the house, dressed in his pre-fitted fancy human clothes, and placed into Susan's lap. She held him for hours. The family allowed him to sleep under the covers of his bed in his custom-made pajamas for most of the day. When he woke up, they fed him a dairy solution from a baby bottle. Several hours after he fell asleep again, the researchers quietly entered the house and snuck up to David's room. Once there, they acted fast. They declawed the dog as quickly as possible, completely without anesthesia. It's not natural for humans to have claws. David woke up during the operation. He was in pain, but he still couldn't open his eyes, so he couldn't see who was doing it. Afterwards, the family wrapped the puppy's paws in bandages because they were starting to bleed. Later, the researchers brought a human baby into the house. He was less than 2 months old. The family took him and posed for a photo. They gave the baby back to the researchers, and the photo was developed a few weeks later. Day 16. David finally opened his eyes, and Susan decided to carry him all throughout the house. She showed him everything so he could get familiar with his surroundings. She fed him more dairy solution and let him crawl around on the ground for a little while. She showed him the picture they took with the human baby on the first day. She pointed at the baby and told the dog,
"That's you."
The dog didn't seem to fully understand. So far, the dog seemed slightly uncomfortable with his clothes, but hopefully he will get used to them soon. Day 23. The family began to speak to the dog and try to teach him common vocabulary and word recognition. They would say things like, "I am happy to see you," but heavily motioning all of the words to the dog so he could understand better. The dog's teeth began to grow in, so the family started feeding him more varieties of food. James picked up David and sat him down in a high chair. It took almost half an hour for the dog to adjust to sitting in this new manner. They gave him a bowl of assorted meat pieces. He had trouble with the first few, but he was able to eat it all without being asked. His clothes were messy, but that was his first experience like this, so it was forgivable. Worse than that, he started to pee and poop wherever he wanted. Susan carried David to most places instead of having him crawl around, so she always took him to the toilets to allow him to relieve himself. The family started to teach the dog the proper way to lie in bed. After they dressed David into pajamas, they placed him in a bed on his side and then placed the covers over him. Day 29. David started to walk. The family and researchers noticed this. If David learned how to walk like a dog, he might never learn how to walk properly. Susan started carrying him around more than usual. They gave him a small playpen filled with typical baby toys that he could play with. James often held David in his lap while he watched television so the puppy could also be more educated about mainstream American culture. The researchers were sure to play lots of popular shows and news programs, but they were careful to not play any material containing dogs. Sometimes David would bark at some of the things on the screen. When this happened, James would tell him to stop yelling. If it happened 3 times in quick succession, James would put David in the corner and force him to stay in a timeout for 10 minutes. At night and in the morning, Harry was tasked with brushing the dog's teeth with his own separate individual toothbrush. Day 38. The family was encouraged to play more music in the house. In order to make David more cultured, they started to play classical music from many different composers on the record player. David appeared to enjoy listening to this. He started to walk more and more. The family knew they couldn't avoid this, so they began potty training him. There was absolutely no way for a dog to sit in the toilet seat without falling in, so the researchers designed a special toilet lid with a small hole in the middle for the downstairs bathroom, so the dog could do his business more sanitarily. The family realized the 3 of them would have to use the upstairs toilet until the experiment was ended, because there was no way a human could use the restroom the same way as the dog. The family spent several months attempting to train David when exactly to go to the bathroom and how to use the toilet like a person. He finally understood and was fully potty trained on day 241. Day 67. The researchers told the family to act more like a family, so they started acting more affectionate towards one another. Every night after dinner, James walked up behind Susan's chair and hugged his arms around her chest. He made sure to do this within view of David. The fake couple would kiss each other more often whenever David was around, and James would always express how proud he was of Harry, even when he wasn't doing anything significant. James encouraged David to drink something other than water and the dairy solution. He got a glass of standard milk and slowly poured it down the dog's throat. Some of it spilled out on the sides of David's mouth, and he choked a little, but it was done. A few hours later, the dog ran over to Susan and started whimpering. She was not sure what to do, so she asked him several times what the problem was, while asking slightly different variants of the question each time. Eventually, he pooped in the middle of the floor. Susan rushed David to the bathroom and plopped him down on the seat cover. For the next half hour, David had terrible diarrhea. He didn't eat much for the rest of the day, and he was allowed to stay in his bed for a few hours. In recent days, the researchers could see through the cameras that David had not been lying in bed properly. They told this to James, and he walked into David's bedroom. He was sleeping curled up in a ball on the foot of the bed. James woke him up and told David to sleep properly in the bed. David was clearly confused and didn't understand why he had been woken up. James forcefully positioned David until he was lying down under the covers like a person would. Incidents like this occurred often. Day 102. David was sitting next to the record player for several hours listening to music. At several points, he howled along with the song. Harry sang as well and encouraged him to do this more. Harry would sing and David would howl along with the instrumental music. At lunchtime, the family decided that David didn't need his high chair anymore. He could sit in a normal chair at the table with the rest of the family. When David first walked into the kitchen for lunch, he wasn't sure where to go because his normal seat was gone. Susan motioned to his new chair, but David just stood staring at it. James picked him up and plopped him down on the seat. It was wood and there was no cushion on it. As a result, David was noticeably uncomfortable and slipped off the chair multiple times in the following days. Day 130. The family knew that David obviously could not use proper silverware, so Susan hardly ever made meals that required the use of forks or knives. David's typical meals at the table were meat. Sometimes they gave him a bowl of soup, but that usually resulted in a mess, and he would get yelled at for that. They never fed him normal dog food. On this day, David sat down on his chair, and Susan put a peanut butter and honey sandwich on the plate. David stared at it for a moment before digging in. He had a bit of trouble chewing it at some points, and he ate 3/4 of it before sliding off the chair and walking away. Susan picked him up and placed him back in his seat. She told him to finish his meal or he wouldn't get any dinner. He didn't really understand, so Susan held up the sandwich up to David's mouth and kept it there until he ate the entire thing. Day 158. The family started taking more and more photos with human children and putting them into the home, proclaiming that they are pictures of David. Now that he was very comfortably walking on all fours, the family tried to make him walk on his hind legs. They reasoned that the more he did it, the more comfortable he would be doing it. They brought him into the living room and joyfully encouraged him to stand up on his hind legs. Each family member demonstrated this to him by awkwardly doing it themselves. David eventually understood what they wanted him to do. He tried lifting his front feet off the ground, but he just came crashing down every time. James lifted up his front legs and made David stand with help, but David was clearly not enjoying this, so James let him go. Throughout the coming weeks, most of their time was spent trying to make David stand on his hind legs, to almost no result. Day 233. Susan tried a different method of making David stand on his hind legs. She put on some upbeat music and got the entire family to dance around. David quickly joined them. After a few minutes, Susan grabbed his paws and hoisted them up. She pretended to be dancing with him. It worked very well. David was spinning around in circles while standing only on his hind legs. Susan was still supporting him a lot, but the family was still very excited. They started to experiment more on this matter in the coming days. Day 310. David was walking to the dining room for dinner. The other family members were waiting. He entered the room, saw them all sitting at the table, and then stopped. He suddenly stood all the way up and looked at them. He was standing on his hind legs completely on his own, with no support from anyone or anything else. The family clapped and cheered. Day 443. The family was told to go check on David. He was in his room and, according to the researchers, was doing something strange. The family walked upstairs and noticed that his bedroom door was open. They peered in and saw him standing with his hind legs fully extended. He was leaning over his dresser with his upper body and was facing away from the family. They walked in and saw that there was a picture on top of the dresser. The picture was one of Susan, James, Harry, and one of the human children. They were all sitting with nice, fancy clothes on in front of a royal blue curtain. They took this picture on the night of day 48. David stole the photo from downstairs and dragged it up to his room. He was just staring down directly at the photo, with an unwavering gaze. He didn't seem to be moving. The family could hardly hear him breathing. James started to walk towards him. He reached his hand out, but the researchers spoke into his earpiece. They told him that no one is allowed to touch him right now. They wanted to see how long he would do this for and what else he would possibly do. The family left and tried to go about their day as usual, but every single day up to that point heavily involved David, so they had a hard time figuring out what to do. David stood in that same position for most of the day. At 4:37 p.m., it's hard to tell exactly what happened. The researchers said that his hind legs gave out, but on the cameras, it looked like he just froze and fell to the side. Regardless, David fell to the floor and completely passed out cold. It could have been from standing for too long, or from the tension of staying in one place too long, or the stress of everything. No one was really sure. What was more odd is that David fell to the ground in a way that looked very wrong. His body contorted slightly before it fell. No one truly knows what happened, but the family rushed in and checked to see if he was all right, or if he was even still alive. He had a slow heartbeat and was very warm. They helped him into his bed and kept the covers off of him. He slept all throughout the rest of the day and all throughout the night. Day 444. David woke up the next day at about 8 in the morning. All three family members were in his room waiting for him to wake up. He seemed to be mentally normal once again and didn't show any sign that he remembered the day before. The picture from the dresser had been removed from the house. The number of family photos around the house had greatly decreased overnight to prevent further incidents like this from happening. David attempted to get out of bed and walk downstairs, but when he jumped onto the floor, his hind legs gave out and he fell on his stomach with a hard bang. The researchers hypothesized that all the pressure on his legs from standing for an unhealthy amount of time must have taken a toll on his strength. Susan gently picked the dog up and placed him back into his bed. She wrapped his hind legs with bandages and put ice on them. He stayed in bed for a few days so he could heal up. Day 498. David sang with the classical records for over an hour. He was on pitch for almost all of the songs, and at some points, he almost sounded like he could have been a human singer. This had all been highly encouraged by the family and the researchers. However, David also started to make some other noises. He hadn't barked in over 100 days, but some of the other sounds that came out of him were concerning, to say the least. He sometimes made a sound similar to that of a choking person. Whenever he made this sound, someone rushed over to see if he's okay, but he was never actually choking. He also made odd grunting and moaning sounds sometimes. Other times, he would be laying on the couch when he let out a noise that sounded like an old man struggling to walk up a set of stairs. The researchers didn't know what to do, so they told the family to try and ignore the sounds as best they can. Day 562. Susan was preparing dinner when she spotted David walking through the hallway on all fours. The researchers wanted Susan to urge him to walk properly on his hind legs again. They started to speak into her earpiece, but before they could even get 3 words out, David stopped. He had jerked violently to the left and pointed directly at Susan. It was as if he suddenly heard something. Then, his front feet quickly rose off the floor so he was standing in a domineering position on his hind legs. He remained nearly motionless as his black eyes stared back at Susan's. Her lip quivered in fear. The way he turned was unsettling enough, but when he stood up, it was like, for a moment, he wasn't a dog anymore. But he sure as hell wasn't a human, either. His body seemed to twist more the longer he stood in that hallway, even though he was barely moving an inch. Then, after what seemed like hours, David put his front 2 feet on the ground again and walked away. Susan kept looking at the spot where he stood. She didn't know what to do. She looked at all her cleaning and cooking appliances and shook her head before turning off the stove. She made sure no one was around before she exited the house to the secret door. When the researchers asked why she left, she told them that she didn't want to be a part of the experiment anymore. She felt unsafe and uncomfortable in the house and wanted to leave as soon as possible. The researchers explained to her that she couldn't leave because she's an integral part of the dog's life. He recognized her as his mother figure. They also reminded her that she signed an agreement saying she wasn't allowed to leave until the experiment is over. So she just had to deal with it. She returned to the house in anger. For the next few weeks, her time spent interacting with David noticeably decreased. Day 628. Susan cooked some shrimp, and Harry grabbed about 3 of them. He walked up the stairs, and James called out to him when he reached the top step. Harry turned around and looked back down at his father. James asked why he was taking the shrimp upstairs, to which Harry replied that he was giving them to David. James told Harry that he shouldn't do that because he isn't David's servant, but Harry explained that he just wanted to do something for his brother. Harry turned back around, and less than 2 feet away from him, David was sitting on the ground, looking intently at the shrimp in his hand. Harry jumped for a second. He didn't hear David walk across the floor behind him. He completely snuck up on him. After catching his breath, Harry told David that he startled him, and he jokingly said that he shouldn't be allowed to do that. David's face did not change. He licked his teeth as he kept his eyes locked on the food. Harry was becoming fearful. Without thinking, he tossed one of the shrimp far into the room behind David. David sprang into action. He leapt into the room and started looking for the shrimp. The moment the shrimp left Harry's hand, he ran down the stairs as fast as his legs could carry him. He was immediately regretting going up the stairs in the first place. He was regretting signing up to be in the experiment. Once David devoured the shrimp, he wanted more. He knew that Harry had more in his hand, so he started running after him. Harry was about halfway down the stairs when David started on the first step. David ran at about twice the speed, and Harry was becoming more scared. He could hear David running up close behind him, getting ready to attack. Just before Harry reached the last step, David stepped in front of him and snatched the other shrimp out of his hand. Harry tripped over David and fell onto the hard floor, head first. He was still heavily and anxiously breathing when he landed. David didn't seem to mind. He just ate the remaining shrimp in peace. James, who had seen the whole thing, was angry. He started to yell at David. He reached his hands out to grab at the dog, but David was ready to defend himself. He lunged at James and swung his paw in the air. He struck his father in the side of the head, which caused a small piece of metal to fly out of his ear. The force of the blow did not hurt very much, but it was much more powerful than expected. James grew even more angry. He barely even noticed the thing that fell out of his ear. David saw the anger in his eyes and started to back away. Without realizing, David stepped on the small metal piece that was inside James's ear. There was the sound of a metallic snap. David actually broke James's earpiece. James grew even more angry. He quickly reached out and grabbed one of David's front legs. He hoisted the dog up and began dragging him upstairs. Susan pleaded for him to stop, but he didn't listen. David was loudly whimpering, and he even tried biting James's hand. James smacked the mud across the face as he hauled him up the stairs to his room. Once at the doorway, James leaned back and hurled David inside. He landed awkwardly on his back. James slammed the door shut and locked it. He stomped back down the stairs as David's door began to bang from the other side. Susan ran up the stairs to unlock it, but James said,
"No, he needs to be taught a lesson."
Harry wasn't hurt too badly. He spent the rest of the day and much of the next day in bed with an ice pack on his forehead. The physical damage wasn't too bad, just a little bump on his forehead and some neck pain. The house was filled with banging and pained moans for the rest of the day as David desperately pleaded for someone to let him out. Day 629. The researchers told James that they would have another earpiece for him in about 2 weeks. He would just have to live without one for a while. With the permission of the researchers, Susan unlocked and opened up David's door the next day in the afternoon. He was sleeping on the floor right next to the door. Susan brushed the fur on the top of his head, which now had some red marks on it. The researchers assumed this was from him running into the door the entire day before. David woke up a few hours later. All the family was downstairs. Susan was getting Harry a new ice pack, and James was on the couch reading the fake newspaper the researchers had provided. Suddenly, James heard Susan say,
"Sweetie,"
in a very scared tone. He put down the paper and looked up. He saw David standing fully extended on his hind legs in the middle of the doorway to the living room. He was blocking out most of the light from the kitchen. He looked down at James with a disturbing half-grin on his face. James asked what he was doing and why he was staring like that. Suddenly, David let out a series of disturbing and guttural sounds. It shocked and deeply horrified the entire family and everyone on the research team. David was clearly trying to speak to James. Even though no one really knew what words were said, they did not sound like they could have come from a dog at all. It was growly and airy, yet it still had somewhat of a human cadence of speech. It sounded as though he was trying to speak human words, but his mouth couldn't form the right shapes. David walked back upstairs after this and left the family frozen in fear and confusion. The researchers spent the next several days trying to decipher what David said. Day 641. Susan and Harry left the house through the secret door. They told the researchers that they both wanted to leave. The entire experiment was getting too freaky for them. They said it was all such an unsettling experience. The researchers reminded them once again that they were not allowed to leave because they signed a contract. They were all in the midst of a large argument when one of the researchers burst into the room. He said he was pretty sure he figured out what David said. He played the tape again for everyone and then told them. He said, "Thank you for the lesson, Father. I hope I can repay you someday." They all listened to the tape again. Some disagreed. Others believed that he wasn't saying anything at all and that he was just making sounds. Susan, Harry, and a majority of the researchers felt confident that that was what David said. Then they started trying to figure out what that meant. They looked around each other and realized that James wasn't with them. He was still in the house. They looked at the cameras and couldn't see him anywhere. They figured that he may have just been in the bathroom or something, but they also realized that they couldn't find David anywhere either. One researcher spoke into the microphone controlling his earpiece, but he was quickly reminded that James's earpiece was broken. Susan and Harry were quickly rushed back into the house to look for them. James wasn't in either of the bathrooms. They looked into his walk-in closet, and they immediately ran out of the room. James's body was laying on the floor of the closet, with several large patches of exposed blood and muscle. The carpet around him was getting more red by the second. His throat and hands had been ripped to pieces, and his clothes had been almost completely torn off of his body. Susan and Harry both descended the stairs in tears. They were terrified of what to think. They entered the living room and saw David. He was sitting in James's spot, watching a blank television screen. His face and most of his body was red. His clothes were ragged and disheveled. The pieces that were left were also a deep red, but he didn't seem to mind at all. He wore that same half-grin as he stared intently at the television. It all looked so wrong. Harry ran up from behind with a knife from the kitchen, but the researchers shouted for him to put it down. They pleaded, saying that if David died, the whole experiment would be for nothing. Harry resentfully agreed and put the knife down. During that night, the researchers quietly entered. They took the rotting corpse from the closet and removed it from the house. Susan and Harry didn't sleep at all that night. They kept their doors locked. David didn't seem to have a problem getting to bed almost as soon as he lay down. Day 649. David had been acting like he owns the house for several days now. He came downstairs in the morning without his clothes on. Susan and Harry were prepared to march him right back upstairs and change it, but the researchers told them to do something else. They said that he would wear his regular clothes tomorrow, but they reasoned that if David was told what to do now, he might do something else violent. They told Susan and Harry to take off their clothes for the rest of the day. The two of them protested for hours, but the researchers reminded them that they were in an experiment and had to do what they were told. At 1 p.m., they resentfully gave in and took off their clothes. They shamefully walked through the house, trying to avoid the cameras as much as possible. David, sometimes glancing at them and giving them a slight nod of approval, but both Susan and Harry repeated, "Just for today," several times. Both of them went to bed early that night and put clothes back on as soon as the researchers allowed them to, which was at 9 p.m. Day 663. When it was time for dinner, David did not come downstairs. Susan did not pry at all. She just ate with Harry. Throughout the past few weeks, they had been avoiding contact with David except when it was absolutely necessary or if the researchers forced them to. David has been wearing his human clothes again, but when Harry dresses him, the dog looks absolutely hateful. At the end of dinner, Susan felt something touch her shoulders. She thought it may have been Harry, but he was sitting right in front of her. She jumped with fright as she saw two hairy paws reach over her and almost touch her chest. David had watched James do the same thing for hundreds of days, and now he wanted to do the same. Susan stood up before David could put his paws anywhere else and marched up to her room. She shut the door behind her and didn't leave for the rest of the day. She didn't care what the researchers told her. Day 669. In the mid-afternoon, Susan opened the door to the downstairs bathroom. She was startled when she saw David sitting on his custom-made toilet cover. He stared back at her. She hadn't had to help him use the toilet in over a year. She looked at the dog, completely dressed in human clothes, sitting on the toilet like a person. She angrily shook her head and shouted,
It just isn't right.
She shut the door and furiously walked away. A few hours later, David was lounging on the couch when the researchers got an idea. They played audio of a dog howling on the TV. David lifted his head and looked around for a moment before returning to his original relaxed position. They played the sound of a dog barking. David didn't seem to even notice. The researchers assumed at this point that David had almost completely lost his natural instinct. Mentally, he was way more human than dog. Day 681. The researchers understood that Susan and Harry did not enjoy being around David anymore. As soon as they both woke up, the researchers told them both to get breakfast and then stay in their rooms for as much of the day as possible. They wanted to see what exactly David would do. Susan and Harry gleefully agreed. They both stayed in their respective rooms for the entire duration of the day with the doors shut. When David woke up and came downstairs, he didn't seem too bothered by the fact that no one else was there. He carefully nudged the pantry open and began to eat all of the food he could find. About 3 hours after Harry isolated himself in his room, he began to feel tired. He prepared himself to take a nap when a thunderous bang on the door shook the entire house and immediately startled him out of the bed. The researchers told him that David had banged on the door with his front legs and was currently standing outside the door. They told him to go answer the door. Harry softly cursed the researchers before getting to his feet and trudging over to the door. He creaked it open and peered out. David was just beyond the doorway, looking on. He was standing on his hind legs, and Harry realized something. David was taller than Harry. He never really thought about it before, but David was definitely at least 3 inches taller. That meant that he was taller than Susan for sure, which made David the tallest one in the house. That thought sent a chill down Harry's spine. Harry asked David what he wanted. David pressed his paw against the wood and pushed the door all the way open until it hit the wall. In a growly and much more frightening tone than before, he shouted, "Open!" before walking downstairs and out of sight. A few hours later, David walked into the upstairs bathroom and began vomiting. The researchers noticed that earlier, he had eaten some foods that weren't healthy for dogs. He spent a few hours in the bathroom, and he didn't contact Susan nor Harry for the rest of the day. Day 703. At about noon, David stood up from the couch on his hind legs and walked into the kitchen. Then he walked into the dining room. These three rooms were all connected to each other, so he just started walking in circles throughout these rooms. For what seemed like hours, David was just walking on his hind legs in one small, continuous circle throughout the bottom floor of the house. His face had a giant grin on it. It didn't look real, but he was smiling so widely that his eyes had tears in them. Like he was being painfully forced. Susan and Harry watched him for some time. They were so confused, as were the researchers. The most logical answer was that many animals in zoos will repeat the same action for long periods of time because they are stressed. They couldn't tell if David was stressed, but after Harry watched him walk in a circle for 10 straight minutes, he was getting concerned. He walked down the stairs and started to talk to David when he passed by, but David never seemed to be paying any attention. His focus was only on what was in front of him. Harry stepped out into David's walking path to try and stop him, but when David came around, he just walked around and continued on. Harry stepped into the doorway to the living room and outstretched his arms. There would be no way of getting past him. But when David circled around and saw that he couldn't get through, he just turned around and began the circle in the opposite direction without missing a beat. Harry gave up and walked back upstairs to his room and just waited for David to tire himself out. After almost an hour and a half of continuous, non-stop walking, David let out a haunting mix between a howl and a moan. He suddenly collapsed to the floor in the middle of the kitchen, and his back legs seemed irregularly bent out of shape. Susan and Harry helped him into his bed, where they attempted to ease the pain. David continued to whimper and screech until late into the night, when he fell asleep from exhaustion. David did not walk properly again after this. Day 718. The researchers realized that they were almost completely unable to get any more definitive results from the experiment. David was confined to his bed due to his horrid leg injury, and all his meals had to be provided by Susan directly to his bed. Every time she did this, she would drop off the tray, stare daggers at the camera in the corner of the room, and then leave. There was no longer any purpose to conduct the experiment. David couldn't adapt to human society anymore, and there was no reason to keep Harry and Susan around if they weren't really affecting David's life anymore. At this point, David had suffered severe and irreversible psychological damage. He had also severely fractured both his hind legs, almost at the point of them breaking, so there was little hope of him ever moving out of his own room by himself ever again. A decision was made. Susan and Harry were escorted out of the house and immediately underwent a psychiatric evaluation. All the food from the fridge, pantry, and all the remaining food stored in the laboratory was brought into David's room. They patted him on the head and walked out of the room. The last thing any person ever said to him was, "Good dog, David." His bedroom door was shut and firmly locked. All the researchers left the house and closed it off. No one was allowed in or out. All the cameras and microphones were disabled and/or removed. And the entire project was abandoned. Millions of dollars had been wasted, and no result was ever published. The researchers were too ashamed of what they had done. Susan and Harry eventually re-entered society. Harry's parents were so happy to see him back home. He was just a teenager when he left, and now he was practically a man. Both of their respective families owned dogs, which were almost immediately taken out. Neither of them ever fully healed from the experience. What's worse, they left David inside that room, with enough food for an entire family of dogs to last a lifetime. Before he was born, the researchers genetically modified David so he would have a much longer life than a normal dog. They intended the experiments to go on for well over a decade. David was less than 2 years old when they abandoned him. No one had any idea how long he would live for. No one ever checked the house again. It was demolished a few decades after, with several pounds of dynamite. What if David was still alive when they blew it up? What if he survived for all those years on his own? We, unfortunately, will probably never know. But maybe it's better this way.